Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for John Hockenberry today. We thank you so much for listening. And on this Friday, the jobs numbers are showing huge gains. The economy added 271,000 jobs last month, way above expectations, pushing the unemployment rate down to 5%. So more people are getting back to work. That's a good thing. But what about the prices of the things that we buy? Now, The Economist may be published over in the UK, but they have a very American way of measuring costs. It's called the Big Mac Index. It uses the price of a McDonald's staple Big Mac to calculate inflation country by country and year by year. And in 1993, Americans paid around $2.30 for a Big Mac. Compare that to today, we're now paying nearly $4.80 for the exact same sandwich. That's more than 100% increase in 20 years. But you need a road to get to that McDonald's drive-thru, and not all prices have gone up in the last two decades. The House of Representatives managed to pass a $325 billion highway and transit bill on Thursday. Now, the money to pay for it hasn't gone up since Bill Clinton was in his first term. There's a guy who used to love a Big Mac. That was 1993, and it was the last time we raised the gas tax to 18.3 cents per gallon. And that's a big problem for our crumbling transportation infrastructure. According to our first guest, Ray LaHood served as transportation secretary in President Obama's first term, and he represented Peoria, Illinois in Congress for seven terms. His new memoir is called Seeking Bipartisanship, My Life in Politics, and he says it's time for Congress to get real about infrastructure spending and also to get real about cooperation.
I think the idea that we haven't raised the gas tax in more than two decades, you can't think of anything that hasn't gone up. In two decades, everything has. Congress really should come to grips with this and raise the gas tax and index it.
All right. So you know Paul Ryan. I'm sure you've known him for years. Yep. I know you have. You stroll out of here and you dial him up, get his direct line, his cell phone, and you say, Paul, I know you're a conservative. Raise that gas tax. It's important. And they'll build roads in Janesville, Wisconsin, too. You can get away with it. What does Paul Ryan say to you today?
He says no.
Right. Yeah. Why? What's going on?
I think conservative Republicans think that there'll be a backlash. And my argument would be the 14 states that raised the gas tax in their own states over the last 2 years, no politicians have been thrown out of office. This is a win-win for America. This money doesn't stay in Washington. It goes back to the states. The largest segment of unemployment in America today is in the building trades. People that build roads and bridges are not working because there is no money to invest in our roads and bridges.
All right, so let's take a step back from transportation. There's a million other issues confronting Paul Ryan, a man you know. What's your assessment of the Ryan moment right now in the Republican House, his mission, his ability to lead them, and whether they're willing to be led? That's the big question.
Well, I think that Paul is obviously a new generation. I think that if Paul were to adopt the idea that when you're elected speaker, you're not elected speaker of your party, you're elected speaker of the whole House. During the time that I worked for Bob Michael, when I was his chief of staff, and he was the minority leader with Tip O'Neill as speaker, Tip O'Neill allowed Republicans to offer amendments. Tip O'Neill allowed debate on issues that he didn't agree with, but he said, hey, I'm the speaker of the whole House.
So let's take it back to the present day, because Americans have heard, when you were Secretary of Transportation, your calls for bipartisanship. It's the theme of your book. It was one of the themes of your career, The Man from Peoria. It's one thing for you to say that the Tea Party factions, the conservatives, aren't interested in governance and they just kind of want to debilitate the government. But it seems to me, for lack of a better word, that we're stuck with this dynamic for years. I mean, gerrymandering, a lot of these members are going to be entrenched. It doesn't seem like the victories that conservatives have had are going to sign them up for the Ray LaHood prescription here. I mean, they're kind of on the rise, aren't they? Why should they change now?
You know, I take your premise, but I will say this. If Republicans, who are in the majority in the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, do not do some significant things to solve the country's problems, whether it be immigration or tax reform or infrastructure, I believe the election a year from now, I think it will be very easy for Democrats, with Hillary as their nominee, to say, we need a change. Not just a change in the House and Senate, but we need a change of direction for people who want to get things done. And even though Tea Party House members, many of them are in safe districts, if they cannot produce an agenda worth of accomplishment on a national level, I think there's a good opportunity for Democrats to take over either the House or Senate as the Democrats continue to maintain the White House.
Colin Powell said the other day that he remains a Republican, and he remains one because it annoys current Republicans. And I thought, that sounds like LaHood. Are you in the same boat?
Look, I'm a Republican. I've always been a Republican. I wouldn't have been able to serve in President Obama's cabinet if I hadn't been a Republican, because they were looking for a Republican to show their bipartisan stripes. And I've given money to Jeb Bush. I hope he gets the nomination. I think he could put up a good fight and actually win the White House if he were nominated and were our nominee. So my son was just elected to my old U.S. House seat as a Republican, and obviously I supported him, and I'll always be a Republican.
Let me ask you one more before I let you go, also from the news. There have been some reports from your time as secretary. You used private email, you got a lot of private emails, but that you made a lot of effort because of instructions from the White House to transfer those emails to proper public addresses, trying not to use your private email for official purposes. Now, your counterpart over at State, Hillary Clinton, handled this very, very differently, and you're one of the people in the best position to know what it's like. How do you assess how she handled this situation, both at the time and in the aftermath?
I think that she's admitted that it was a mistake, and she's admitted that this was probably not the right thing to do. Whether there's any secretive or top secret or high-level emails that came to her private server and to her private account, the FBI is looking into that. But I agree with her. This was not the proper way to handle it.
And you didn't do it that way.
And I don't think any other cabinet member did it that way either.
Ray LaHood served 14 years in Congress. That's 7 terms and a term as Secretary of Transportation for President Barack Obama. His new book, Seeking Bipartisanship, My Life in Politics, filled with backroom stories of leadership coups, legislation, and political fights. Ray LaHood, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.